This week on RSVNB Update, Parcels from the Hedge is back with new cosmetics, and we summarize the potential Stone Spirit changes and provide our thoughts on the mining economy. We also have a look back at Mod Warden's first week since introduction and say goodbye to Mod Shawnee. This is RSVNB Update, episode 749, recorded Wednesday, October 30th, 2019. Parcels from the Past. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVNB Update. This week is, you know, one of these weeks that's, I think, going to have mixed feelings around the RS community, whether it's, of course, regarding Mod Shawnee's departure, the Stone Spirits update, or just the fact that, you know, we are heading into November now at this point. But I think we would be remiss if we didn't actually talk about the news of the week, and we're going to do that in just a short while. But Tanis, you're here as you are each and every week. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane.
And Tycho, you're joining us in for this one. You wanted to sit in and talk about the Mod Shawnee party, so we figured we'd let you in on the show for that. So welcome back, Tycho.
Yeah, there is so much to do, and there's so much that have happened, not just in RuneScape, but also real life. But I had to come back. I really had to be here this week, so I'm happy for you having me.
Thank you. And, you know, I'd also just like to say that I think this episode is going to be interesting because we don't know where the discussion is going to go on various aspects of it. And lots of positive praise coming in from Mod Warden, but I'm already putting the cart before the horse. And I have a big question, too, I want to ask all the listeners, but we'll get to that in the what have we been doing section about this. So starting off this week, Parcels from the Hedge is back, and this is the annual, I think. Feels like we had it earlier this year or something, but Parcels from the Hedge is back.
Yeah, I thought we had it like in May or something.
Yeah.
Right? And then before that, we had it not too long before. It's like the third time, I want to say.
28th to the 22nd, Parcels from the Hedge will be running. First ran May 1st of 2018. I'm just checking the wiki here to see when the other ones were. Yeah, March of 2019. March 4th,
yeah,
April 3rd.
March.
So we were right. It was relatively not too long ago. So
it feels like an eternity.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a fairly innocuous update. You get it when you log in. There's really not too much engagement associated with it. So from the 28th to the 22nd, you'll get a daily gift when you log in the form of a parcel. And then every multiple of 5 days after that, when you log in, you'll get a bigger package of lost postage that you can open up, and there'll be other stuff in it. And throughout this, you'll also get postage letters from your fans out there in the form of fan mail. Thank you, Tycho, on that. That'll provide you with postage stamps, which you can use to purchase many other things, including parcel loot beams, the sack of huge parcels, the sack of lost property, huge and large parcels, and other parcel cosmetic overrides. But new this time, you can also purchase cosmetic override rings for each of the Barrows brothers as well.
Which is nice because we all love Fashionscape and looking really cool. But I'm not really a fan of this because I like events that make people change their behavior. Maybe not doing their daily herb runs, maybe look into some bigger priorities. But this is basically just log in and do whatever you are doing and get some free stuff.
Yeah, getting some nice stuff with it.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about this? Not many people really think about this, but you can purchase other things from the store as well. In terms of lost property, which, you know, we need to just remind everybody of that. Yeah, I mean, even if you find the things being put in your inventory as being useless, there is reason to pick them up and you know, carry on with this event because you can get things throughout this, like protein packs at the heavy lost property. The bulky one can give you Slayer VIP tickets and Death Touch darts, as well as Aura and Life refreshes. And if you get all the way up to the weighted ones, you're going to get a large parcel, an elite clue scroll, large protein pack, 3 death touch darts, 3 VIP coupons, large and small bag of invention components, and the aura and life refresh in multiple quantities on this front. So, I mean, it's definitely something I think to interact with, and it's something I think everybody can also be happy about, because you don't need to worry about it. Essentially the microtransaction aspect from it, which many of the live events that have come into game in the past have had. So I think this is a good event all around to run.
Yeah, that's fine. I wish they could figure out a way to make it so that when you wore those rings, you could move. That's
right.
The only,
oh, yeah,
the only thing I wish we could run around. With
yeah, the transmogs.
Yeah, I remember that there were people trying to get around it, and some of them did by hilariously delaying themselves and then clicking on a minimap place really far away so they could run around as Dragonkin. But it was really, the distance is really limited, and it looks more like you're the Flash than actually walking. So, but yeah, I really wish that, and that should be something. And one more tip, if you who are listening are annoyed over getting letters in your inventory all the time, you can talk to Postage Pete and have them sent to your bank instead.
Oh, that's a good idea. I didn't know that. Nice. There's also double Treasure Hunter keys this week. Double daily keys. That was just mentioned right below that note. So.
Yeah.
All right. Not too much to write home about then with the parcels from the hedge, pun intended. So we're going to move on to the patch notes right now. And the patch notes are equally light this week as well. So starting off, the country. I don't know why I said country. Eleanor is not a country. It's a world. But the patch notes say, do you need something to spice up your life? Are you feeling less spooky? Well, do not fear or do. But the farmers of Gielinor have been hard at work growing lots of pumpkins ready for this Halloween season, adding decorations to the trees across the world in an effort to make your adventures extra spooky. And these are the little shots of all the pumpkins and whatnot running around Gielinor. I mean, we don't have an actual Halloween event this year, but I think this is a good compromise, so to speak, that you'll see anywhere. You're pretty much moving.
Well, I mean, it's just a nice little something. I've seen a lot of anger towards it, which I don't quite understand.
What?
Yeah, people mad. Oh, you did this with no Halloween event, and then look at what OS is doing. Yeah, this is typical stuff.
Well, see, that's the thing. RuneScape 3's job is to push the narrative forward and push the game content forward. And that's what the episodic content team does. They release content that is permanent in nature. And if you're going to do a Halloween thing, a Halloween quest or a Halloween event, you want it to stay in game permanently.
Exactly. And you know, I'm hoping for the time when it makes sense with our story, or however, when we could add, you know, Death's House with what we had. What was it? Was it 2015?
Yeah.
Where we had the Ghostbusters thing. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that was a fun one. That was a really fun one.
And I would repeatedly do that.
I wonder what the logic is about, you know, just bringing something like that back on Halloween. You know, just the Ghostbuster side of it, because I don't think you get much more Halloween than that. And you could make it a way to maybe, you know, get some of the Halloween sweets, get the ectoplasmator as an item, because it is limited in the way it comes into game. And maybe there could just be some other little vanity thing around it that you could get. And, you know, Star Trek Online does this for the Halloween. They have this horror-themed event that runs on Halloween and Friday the 13th, whenever they hit. And it's, you know, just a one-day event. It's a limited-time episode you can complete, and you get a special duty officer from it. And the lure is that it's around only once a year. And it's just to set you in the mood. It doesn't even give that much for it. So I wonder what the logic is, if it would be okay to bring something back, just like the Ghostbusters event at Death's House. And
I mean, they tested that that way with the Christmas event, like, what was it, 2 years ago, by bringing back old Christmas event.
Yeah, and apparently they didn't get played that much.
Together.
So, One other thing with this. Remember, we were also supposed to be getting an Araxor quest for Halloween, but it wasn't quite ready. We'll probably be getting that in November at some point.
Okay,
together with 120 farming.
Mm-hmm. November's going to be a great month.
Mm-hmm.
Next up in the patch notes, Islin no longer says it's time we left when he is traveling alone. Instead, the message now reads as it is time to leave. When being prompted about out-of-date graphics drivers that don't show this again for 90 days checkbox will no longer be offset.
Oh, that's bugged me forever.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I very rarely have a crash or a message that pops that in, though. I guess that's just because I keep my graphics drivers all the way up to date. This next one's for you, Tycho. Clan Vexes can now be placed without the Vex being equipped.
Yeah, that's one for me. Probably me nagging a little bit about it. For you who don't know, I basically live with my Vex. I eat with my Vex. I sleep with my Vex. I mean, I do everything with my clan Vexillum. So, yeah, that's a nice add.
During the Light Within quest, when you keepsake override a piece of the exoskeleton, you can ask Arianwyn to reclaim another one for the quest objective. Okay, that's interesting to know that there are people who keepsake those things during the quest and were hung up by that. That's good. The clan members list has been visually increased in size on mobile, and this includes buttons on the pop-out menu to prevent accidental taps. Fixed magic book filtering always defaulted abilities. And finally, improvements have been made to the currency pouch on both clients. These include premium currencies are now in their own detailed section. The small view of the currency pouch has been removed from the backpack on mobile as it was too small to be reliably used. And the currency pouch button that was on the backpack has been added to the worn equipment panel on mobile only. And once again, you see what's happening here is that the some of the UI items are being shifted around to save space, though I can't say what that does for usability by moving a currency pouch to the worn equipment panel.
We could ask Earth about that one.
And the fact is that it's going to be one place on the desktop, but another place on the mobile client. That's deeply concerning to me.
Not really to me, because maybe not everybody has this point of view, but I see mobile and desktop as two separate ways to play RuneScape. And due to mobile now having a different layout and different interfaces and must have revolution when you do combat, I see it as a different experience than when I'm on desktop. So I don't have any problem with them moving around things in mobile, because that's more to convenience and to make sure that my fat fingers don't press three things at the same time.
All right, think of this a different way then. You're on a website, say Twitter, or maybe your favorite news website, and you have a specific view of that website on your desktop, and then you go to your mobile phone, and yeah, it still, you know, has the story and the content in largely the same place, but it doesn't look so drastically different that pieces of functionality are in different spots. This is just, in my view, a bad example of design. Typically, what you want is you want a design that flows and flows nicely into one another, so you don't jar your users when they swap between them. So, will be interesting to see if this one persists. And the last patch note of the week, we have added the ability for your phone to receive a notification when your port ships return. To get these notifications, send your ships out on your phone. This is everything people wanted mobile for.
Yeah.
Initially.
You know how much I wanted that? When I started doing ports, like, it might be forever, like 4 years ago. I was so young back then. This was the time before I even done my bachelor's. I actually applied for Jagex to make ports on mobile, and I sent it in. It's true. It's a true story. I offered them my soul just so I could make ports on mobile because I wanted that so bad.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting, I think, to see where they can go from this, because if you're building something like this that is going to work for ports on the back end, you're going to bake it into the code base so you can easily hook it into other things as well. And two of the things that I potentially think that we could see happening with this is first the rebranded Miscellanea, and the second one is maybe farm checks. The farming works a bit differently, so maybe not the farm one. But
Shane,
an hub timer would be great, though.
Yeah. But if you have a hub timer on your phone, don't you get a pocket massage every 45 minutes?
You could, or you could just be like me and you know automatically when it's time to go.
But then what's the idea of having a notification if it's built in your DNA?
I don't know. Built in mine. I can use it.
Alrighty, well, that's it for the patch notes this week. I'm really interested to see where we go with that last one on mobile in particular. So, for other pieces of content. Alrighty. So, next piece of news. Stone Spirits. Spirits.
Woo!
Mining and Smithing, everyone's favorite update. It came out in January, and Stone Spirits have been a lingering problem.
So says the PVMers.
Yeah. And my view of the problem in place is that if you look at the price of, for example, the Animicas, Animica is currently only 400, or rather about 4K in value on this. So that there's that. But when the Animicas first came in, they were upwards of 18K a piece, which is, of course, I think, too high. And remember before the mining and smithing rework hit, it was commonplace to see something like Rune Ore or Rune Bar somewhere around 11, 12K a pop, depending. And there was a inherent value associated with that. And for me, from my perspective, that's what this Stone Spirit rework should set out to fix. So we're going to talk a bit about after some of the comments that were made in the live stream on this, because that's important too. But let's go through the actual changes that are being proposed on this first. So from the analytics department, the net impact on drop tables hasn't been as impactful as players believe. When the numbers have been run, the worst case is Araxor was down about 4% in average drop value, while Nex was actually up slightly. And they say, we've received a lot of feedback that getting a drop that's worth significantly less than the other items on the drop table feels bad, even if it's not having any real impact on gold per hour. And, you know, I think we got to just say out there to the PVM crowd that when they publish a news post on this, and I made up the term analytics department, but what I really mean where these numbers likely came from was Mod Timbo on this. And 4% really ain't that much in terms of being dropped down.
But did you notice even in the live stream, they were very, very careful to say, but we know it feels bad. We don't want it to feel bad for you guys. We want to feel good.
I must actually agree with Tannis there, because I love God Wars Dungeon 2, and they drop both Luminite, Necrite, and Phasmatite Stone Spirits. Even though I feel that the Stone Spirits is balanced in value, and I can accept them being at the lowest of the drop table, the feeling when you get them really brings the morale down. It brings the experience down. So it's more the reputation is dragging the experience down. And that's actually a sad case, because that could potentially mean that even though they would be fixed in value, they have a reputation that persists them.
Right. But, I mean, you look at the value of gold coming in, and that doesn't lie. You know, this isn't some scenario where you look at, for example, the real-world economy, and people say that we're feeling our purchasing power is down from where it was 2 years ago. People feel that way when they see the go to the grocery store and their prices have gone up and whatnot. Whereas with this, there are the exact analytics to show, because it is a much more controlled economy than real life. So it's really easy to make the assertion in that, and that, you know, this is, I think, just a feeling, like you said, Tanis, it's a feeling that they tiptoed around to be careful of, that I think comes down to the collective mindset of RuneScape, is that they feel they're not valuable because that's a collective mindset, and that's the mindset they're taking, but the analytics say otherwise.
Yeah, well, and I'm kind of being a little bit sarcastic when I say that, just because I just have a problem with Stone Spirits, and I have a problem with making big, big changes in order to make the drops feel good. That's why, right. I would say, would you feel better if we gave you money?
Because I think people would say yes.
Yeah, and that's why I would rather. I don't know why we're so afraid of just money.
Yeah, and you know, to jump around a bit in the live stream, they said that if this doesn't work, that is one option they're willing to look at eventually.
Yeah,
but hang on. I just want to attack this from a logical perspective on this, and say that my big issue with Stone Spirits from the beginning has been that it all comes down to their apparent value in terms of what they're actually used for, right? I mean, they're used to theoretically double the amount of ore that you get, but at the same time, it's really not worth it when the top ore in the game is only at 4K GP each. So my opinion on this fact is as to actually, and we'll get to this later, but just to say it concisely, Modjack did say that, you know, there was a suggestion, why not make Stone Spirits directly convertible into salvage, and we said, yeah, we said this, I think, back in February or March, as that was a way to go. So there's that side of it. But yeah. I think that the real problem with Stone Spirits is the amount of ore in game. And recall that when the mining and smithing update was first proposed, they said that they wanted ore to come in, and they reaffirmed this on the stream this week. They wanted ore to come in from the player miners. On that, and you know, they touch on this in the next paragraph, because they say a lot of you want to us to fix this by either removing Stone Spirits or giving them some kind of new, very powerful value. And what they actually want to do with this is address the ore value with this. And they say this is that there's just too much ore coming into game by way of AFK mining. So they say this is exacerbated by a lack of interest in smithing in general, and the release of the rework saw a huge and sustained increase in players mining, but no similar increase in player smithing, even after double XP weekend, when you'd expect to see a spike in buyable issues. They said they addressed this by making smithing more convenient, i.e. being able to one ticket and being able to smith faster, and buffing armor spikes. So what they're going to effectively be doing with this is reducing the amount of ore that and XP that comes into game by about one quarter on the mining side. And on the smithing side, the post as is written says they're going to increase the amount of components that come into game when you smith something. And, you know, initially you get 8 components, whether it's a longsword plus 1 or an elder rune plate body plus 5. And what they're going to be doing with this is that, as it's written right here, in the post, the amount of components is going to be equal to the amount of bars used to make the item multiplied by 3, which means that if you were making that longsword plus 1, you would get 12 components from it now. But if you made a elder rune plate body plus 5, just as an example, I don't know anybody who would actually smith that, you would get 480 components. And in the live stream, they said it's actually going to go higher than this, because the amount of time you need to invest for that elder rune plate body is just too much.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the problem, right?
Right.
It's the time.
It's a time factor.
Yes.
But that's
now,
investment.
I really now, think they hang on. I just want to float something by you guys here. Maybe. And we'll address this later, but maybe let's just say, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, that the nerfs plan for mining are too much. Let's just say that that might be the case right now. But by increasing the amount of components that come from a smithable item by more than times 3 for the bar, what that effectively means is that you're going to be looking at things like Elder Room plus 1 and plus 2 as potential things that Iron Man can make for components and people can sell for disassembly, though I don't know if people would actually want to buy those for disassembling components. I don't know. But I think that attacking it both from the supply side and the demand side is the way to go. And like I said, at the end of the day for me, the goal here is to make ore prices go up.
I'm going to start this off. First off, I really like the idea of bringing up the components from smithable equipment. If I take in comparison our battle staffs that are insanely popular for getting powerful components, they have a chance for 12 components. So, and an elder and a longsword plus 1 to give the same amount, that's not far off. You make the basic and then upgrade it. And so 480 is very impressive. I don't think
In mind that's a plus 5 and you know the amount of work that goes into making one of those.
Yeah, of course, but I really think they missed a big point when they said who's going to make a plus 5.
Right.
And the and people that's what I see who as well. Want the XP, because a plus 5 from plus 4 gives a ton of experience. Not to mention that plus 5 is needed to make Elder Rune Burial Armor, which in that turn gives also amazing and crazy amounts of XP. People were banking all that thing before Double XP Weekend, which I think was one of the reasons why they didn't see the spike, because people were just handing it in for double the XP. So I don't think this will be on a level where you can buy components, because it will be so huge popular for those who do invention and those who want the really good XP. It will make people smith it on their own and do it. So from that point of direction, I think this is a really good change. I'm just worried it's overpowered, because 480 on my mind on an Elder Rune plate body plus 5 that already has 0% chance of junk. That one item is going to make a great difference.
And they did say that there will be a chance for uncommon components, a higher chance for uncommon components.
Oh, yeah. Like, combine that with the invention Master Cape. Wow.
And now it's just a question of, do you need covered parts, plated parts, deflecting parts, strong components, and protective components?
Yeah, and that's up to luck. That's down to the dice.
I know, but I mean, do you need those components? I'm not up on my invention, so I don't know if those are good components or not.
I mean, protective components is always needed to make armor gizmos and a number of machines at the invention guild. But once you get those one paid off, then no more. But one thing that I'm always looking out for as a ranger is plated components for mechanized chinchampas.
Yep.
And those are so annoyingly...
The longswords give sharp and dexterous components, so we'll be seeing an increase into those. And, you know, it's actually said here that the junk rate will be standard for the level of the item, so in practice it means that Elder Rune items wouldn't be worth disassembling on their own. So that's why they're having a higher chance with the uncommon components on that front.
Yeah. With this update, you would go from having two choices to three. Either one, you may upgrade it as much as possible and hand it in for XP. Solution two, you upgrade it as much as you want and then either go to sell it or to alk it for how much the alk value is. And now the third option, you disassemble it for invention. And this is something that really saddens me, that we don't get the invention pouch where you can get components until you unlock invention. Because that would basically make it possible for you to prepare beforehand all the way from level 20 smithing, if you get a basic understanding of what component is and how important it will be later on.
I want to bring Tanis in onto this discussion because, you know, I am always for reducing the amount of items in game to make things more profitable for skillers in this front on the mining side. So what's your take on the changes that we saw here with this, or the potential changes at least?
I mean, in my opinion, I think this is being done more for the drop table side of things. I think they're doing it through mining because of the ore coming in. And unfortunately, it's one of these catch-22 situations where for a single individual that is AFK mining, you're not actually bringing in that much ore. Not a ton.
Yeah.
Not what the numbers are saying. But if you're running 10 accounts, then now all of a sudden it adds up. And so I hate that we're looking at an AFK mining nerf in order to prop up the value of an item. I think would be better off in the dustbin of history and just give the PBM guys just cold hard cash. But I am in favor of what they're doing with like the juju potion and using stone spirits. That
the perfect juju mining potion will refill your stamina bar whenever a stone spirit is consumed. So what that effectively means is that anytime you mine an ore when you're AFK mining, you're going to go back to full stamina if you're using stone spirits.
Yeah, it adds a cost,
this is another sink for stone spirits for people who want to do that. You're going to get extra ore, but you're also going to be more efficient because of it.
Yeah, it adds a cost, but at least you can look at it as efficient play that way, I guess. So that's one way to look at it. I just really hate that they have to, go in and rebalance something that they just got done
but
doing.
It's actually a buff, but it's actually a buff to mining Tanis.
It's a buff. Well,
it's
not
a buff to mining because if this goes as planned, it's going to increase ore prices.
I don't think
I really don't look at the prices as much as I'm looking at I'm looking at the resources and the goods because that's what you can turn.
But at the
XP.
End of the day, the GPs are what everyone counts everything in. Because if you can make
wait.
If you can make 1 million GP an hour, and I'm just throwing this number out there, mining, but you could make 2 million GP an hour herb farming. But you want to go smithing at the end of the day? Why don't you just go do that herb farming instead and buy the goods for mining?
Well, and that's exactly where I'm at now, right? I was mining my own stuff, but I couldn't with one person. It's not, you know, like when I run a mining alt, it's my alt, and it's so that I can actually do Slayer on my main or something like that. You know what I mean? I don't have like a farm of these guys doing this stuff, so it's kind of unfortunate in that regard. I don't know if it's going to – I really don't know if it's going to address the money side of things. If it increases the price, great. That's wonderful. But I've kind of come to a point –
If it doesn't, you got to go to a different solution entirely on that. And you know what I'm going to say is that even if you remove stone spirits, that wouldn't affect the price of ore.
No, it probably wouldn't. But I mean this was – when it came to the mining and smithing rework, that was like – that really – as painful as it is for me to say this, it really put things in perspective that you can't make good money upskilling. You can make money. It's probably not going to do better than $3 million an hour.
Unless you come across a mini gold rush.
Exactly. There's always something like that, you know, some bear meat or, you know, it's just like crazy things that happen. But, you know, just throughout the course of your day-to-day gameplay, it just seems like that's the way it is. I mean, even with the masterwork, you know, I really thought that was going to be a way that skillers would be able to make money. And it just didn't really end up that way.
I think that's because there's many other options out there for armor, and PVM is still incredibly magic focused.
Yes. Well, that's the reason, right? There's not a big case for melee, but all that being said, like I accept that because I was still much, much happier with the way that the skills work.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we need to be clear here that the mining and smithing rework is perhaps one of the best updates ever for RuneScape.
Oh, yeah. And that's why I just was like, do you have to touch that just because this one little component didn't work as well as what you thought, you know?
And you know, I think the disconnect here is that the talk is all about stone spirits, right? But nowhere in this thread here, or rather this news post, is the perfect juju mining potion mentioned, which is what makes this all click together on the mining side.
Yeah, and honestly, they said, even if you're clicking once a minute, or if you're only clicking on rock attunities, that's still enough that you're not going to notice this all that much. This is really only going to tank people that are, like, straight up AFK.
And we know what the problem is with that after. We'll talk about that in the live stream, what Mod Jack had to say on this. So
I only want to say a note that I feel I'm somewhere in between you two. I don't think the low ore prices is a problem, and I don't see a problem either with the ones who are fully AFK and don't even watch the RuneScape screen is a problem. My problem, from my point of view, is that the ore spirits should be around the same value of the ore. For example, Runite Stone Spirits, it was like 500 GP, but the ore itself is worth 1,000. So in my point of view, it should go up to 900. And what they should do is to give skillers a reason that, stone spirits are awesome, I must buy that. Because we got a whole PVM community forming these stone spirits. So,
are they, though? I mean, you get like one or two of the Animikas from Solak, and that's it.
Yeah, at the highest level, but we get a ton of Luminite, Runite, and Phasmatite and Nekite, like tier 40, 50, and 70. Those are farmed regularly. So, in my opinion, there should be a huge demand. And demand there is for the highest level, like Dark Animica and Light Animica. And that's why they are stupidly expensive, even more expensive than the ore itself.
Yep.
I wonder.
And I would wish
but
that.
But it doesn't come in game.
I wonder if we're looking at this the wrong way. I wonder if we're looking at this the wrong way, you guys. Because everyone used to think of ore as the mainstay back.
The thing I mine in order to make my products.
And that's where I'm going with this. If you look at the price right now of an Elder Rune bar, it's 9.7K on the GE.
I don't care.
And just wait. 9.7K on the GE takes 9.7K, so a little bit more to make it when you combine the rune ore or the rune bar and the two Animica ores needed to make it. And if you look at it from that perspective, an Elder Rune Bar is about the same price that a Rune Bar used to be before the update. So I wonder if there's some psychological fix in the community, wherever the bulk of the Elder Rune Bars are, is that, hey, this thing should stay where the old Rune Bars used to be. And maybe that's why our ore prices are depressed.
Could be. I know, like, I was shocked when
I went to... What I'm wondering, is there some kind of cartel out there that has a bunch of the bars held or something, and they
release
a certain amount of bars per day or something like that.
I don't know.
Are merchant clans, and there was one merchant clan that recently was like exposed for hyping up the price of the Terrasol Mall, especially during the weapon diversity beta, because it would be OP plus 5 damage. And
to be fair, it wasn't just them. People were doing that to Drygors too.
Yeah, okay, and Tannis could have made a fortune right there if he had sold him. But anyways, but yeah, of course there can be some psychological problem, but I don't think that should not be a reason to look into giving Stone Spirits an effect. For example, let's say they gave Stone Spirits the additional effect of consuming one in order to bank one ore. That makes you consume like 2 Stone Spirits for 1 extra ore.
That makes mining too powerful, though. If it was just one.
Okay.
I think.
But then that's a balancing thing. But
here's the thing.
The point still is you need to give skillers a reason to always bring Stone Spirits with them, because they're being farmed by PVMers.
Yeah, and you know, the reason I mentioned the part about, you know, rather than looking at it at the constituent parts, how Rune Ore used to be 13K, and now we have the Elder Rune bars about 9.7, which is about what they were before the rework. If you look at the price of a concentrated ally bar, which is one of each bar in it, that's 37.6K right now. But according to GE prices, it only costs you 34K to make. So you could, in theory, make 3K for each concentrated ally bar that you would make.
Take it with a bit of salt, because
I know. And obviously these are market prices, and you might not be able to have a necessary demand on that front. But the point that I'm trying to make with this is that we're looking at this from the old-fashioned gathering side of the economy, which is what we want ore to be based on a value of. You know, the highest tier ore should obviously be worth more than 4K, right? So my point is that there are things that are out there that are eerily similar to the price of what the top bar and ore used to be. It's just it's not what we're expecting. And that's why I'm wondering if maybe there's some kind of manipulation going on with the Animikas. And once again, I have no evidence of this. If you're in a merchanting clan and you know anything about this, let me know. And Tannis, I think we should reach out to our sources on this.
Yeah, for sure,
because it's oddly suspect, right?
It kind of is. I mean, I thought it was really weird when I went and you pay almost the same for a straight up rune bar as you do for like an Animica ore.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, which it's nuts.
And, you know, remember, when this update came out, there were a good number of people who didn't want that. They wanted Rune to reign supreme all the time because they had huge stockpiles of it, right? So if those people all banded together, this is what's causing your depressed ore prices.
Yes, that could be.
I think that's just people being overprotective over their bank, and who wouldn't, because RuneScape is a hoarding game.
Okay, we'll talk more about this in the live stream. I think we got most of what we needed to out of the way, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. We'll see how it works out. This is one solution. You know, I probably would have favored something a little bit different, but at the end of the day, I'm willing to say let's wait and see. And now I'm not going to take away from like the good stuff that we heard this week.
Yeah, exactly,
sure.
With the mining and smithing rework too. Two final notes on this. The stamina mechanic from the Saren Stones is being removed entirely, so those will be the go-to AFK method. And in regards to the component buff, the breakdown perk would be insanely strong, so they're changing it to reflect the new rates.
Okay. Just saying that I'm a fan of these changes, but I think they could have gone a little bit further with Stone Splits, but we will see.
Alrighty, next up, we're actually getting a poll, which is surprising here. So this poll, launched today, will be asking for help in prioritizing a series of new pets. These pets will be focused on areas of the game that don't already have them. They could be clue scrolls, player-owned ports, and mini-games. They want to launch 6 of them, and the votes will help determine which content they'll be bundled with. So once they know what the top 6 categories are, they'll kick off a competition, and then the community will get a chance to flex its creative muscles and design the dream pets. But that's a topic for another day, they say. So there's going to be an area pet, potentially. So when you're skilling or participating in combat within a given area, you'll have a chance to unlock an area pet. So for example, if you're hunting golden warblers, you'll have a chance to unlock the pet for the Caridian Desert area. Okay. I don't know how I feel about an area pet, but we'll take it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I want a... If they add a cape, a title, or a pet, which is basically used to show off to other people, then I think it's important that it has a strong identity. Everybody knows the quest cape. Everybody knows the comp cape and max cape. That's basically in every player's DNA to recognize.
Yeah.
So, and an area pet, I don't think it would have a strong identity. And with pets being given out, I think this wouldn't be worth their time.
All right. Next up is a challenge pet. So when you complete a challenge, there'll be a random chance of getting a challenge pet. And since the player is limited to one chance a day, all they're looking at removing recommended challenges. They're also looking at further ways the player could gain the pet, and this might include a better chance to drop when completing consecutive challenge, or a pet challenge from Farah that only rewards a role on the pet table. Interesting.
I actually like this one because I'm a big fan of anything that changes player behavior, and challenges can actually be manipulated, but after you get 99 in a skill, you can block off the challenge. But before that, if you go for this, then this is going to bring you a lot of activity. And due to the activities often being very heavily XP related and giving XP rewards, that's going to help you to progress in the game and level up. So,
And with the one chance a day, do either of these jump out to you yet?
So, yeah.
Do either of these jump out to you, Tanis, yet?
No.
Okay. Next up is clue scrolls. Whenever you complete a clue scroll step, there will be a chance of getting the clue scroll pet. Chance will increase based on rarity of clue scrolls. Ideally, this pet would be dieable, and that's something they want to look at, but isn't guaranteed.
Oh, well, that's kind of neat.
Yeah. We already got a clue pet.
But we don't have one that's dieable. I like to see these personalization features with it. So, but and I don't even do clue scrolls, but I think that's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, that is cool. But add that to the clue scroll shop, then just
yeah. I mean, that's a fine idea too.
Yeah, but no. I'm not in agreement with the clue scroll pet being a random chance. No, add it to the store.
Next is the distraction and diversion pet, and you'll have a chance at gaining the D&D pet, and this will vary for each D&D, the chance. And rather than have a unique pet for each D&D, they'd like to do something similar to the Lorehound, a base pet with accessories related to the most popular D&Ds.
Okay. I like it. It gets people to D&Ds, which is more easily to get people to than minigames. So, yeah.
Event and weekends pet. When you participate in a temporary piece of content, you'll have a chance at unlocking this pet. This encompasses double XP weekends, time-limited events, seasonal events, winter weekends, the beach, mental health awareness week, and more. I mean, at least with this, we know the beach is probably coming back, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right. So there's that.
Well, there's a promise, and we know that Jagex has to keep their promises.
Money-making pet. Whenever you gain gold from an in-game combat or skilling activity, you'll have a chance at unlocking this pet. This would not include player trades, alking, or selling on the GE. And we are playing around with the idea that the pet may change or grow based on the amount in your cash stack.
So when you are having like four party hats in your inventory, full cash stack, then we are talking about having a Godzilla walking around?
No, remember, it's only when you gather GE or GP by combat or skilling.
Okay, but then David would be walking around with a Godzilla.
That's probably true. That's probably true. Next up, minigame pet, like the D&D pet. When you're participating in a minigame, you'll have a chance of getting the pet. Chances will be different per minigame, and it would do something like the Lorehound mechanic yet again.
Player, I like it.
Yeah.
But same problem. Get people back to minigames. The spotlight works, but outside of it, no activity.
Player-owned farm pet. This would be gained randomly whenever you participate in a player-owned farm or ranch out of time activity that gives XP.
Yay. That's
this one cool. would be fun.
Yeah, I want like a sheepdog. Ooh, I wonder if we can get
that'd be fun.
A little dog.
Or maybe
from
he could get... No, we already have a cat in game. I was going to say maybe you could pickle Machani's cat.
No, we want the... We could get the dog from the farm.
Ooh, that'd be something.
Yeah.
And it would maybe change based on how many beans you had or something. Ooh.
Yeah.
Mm. Player-owned ports pet. On the completion of any voyage, you'd have a chance to get into player-owned ports pet with a lower drop rate for failed voyages. If we deem this to be too time-gated, they could look at other things in the ports area, including Meg, the random events, and more.
Don't know. Maybe. Maybe.
Season pet. This pet would be gained when doing activities over a seasonal period like Christmas, Halloween, and Easter. These actions would be limited to anything you could also gain in a skilling, combat activity, or boss pet, and you would not be able to get this pet outside of the holiday season. I really like this one.
I really dislike it. I don't see this change player behavior. It's just do what you normally do during one of these four seasons, and if you fail, then you have to wait like 9 months.
See, the reason I really like this one is that, to me, things like my party hat and scarves are Christmas mementos in-game, right? And in a similar vein on Star Trek Online, the Christmas event there also provides various cosmetic mementos as well. And I think it would be really fun if we had this kind of thing in RS. And we already do to a degree, but I think the pet one would take it further. Next up is Wilderness and PvP, and they say they need to explore this one a bit further, but we imagine there would be a chance of gaining it when performing certain activities in the wild. There would be a good chance of gaining the pet for any PVM or combat skilling activity, and this chance would be multiplied according to the depth of the wilderness that you're in, and there would also be a chance of getting the pet from player killing. More on this later.
I'd be a fan of this.
Then last but not least is the Pet of Pets. And unlike other pets on the list, which are gained randomly, the Pet of Pets would be unlocked automatically if you ever gain all of the boss, skill, activity, and combat pets at once. It would be with you forever when unlocked, and you would not need to maintain it.
Wow.
All right, so where are we at? Which ones do we want, and which ones do we not want?
The Pet of Pets sounds like the tamed completionist, but for pets. I'm never gonna get that one, but oh, I want it. The Wilderness and the D&D are those that stands out the most for me.
Tanis, which one's your favorite?
Probably the player on farm pet and the Pet of Pets.
Oh, why the Pet of Pet one? That's not what I would have thought.
It's kind of like the titles, right? You know, like the master of all, or jack of all trades type thing, and then you could have that, and then your pet of all pets, you know, kind of,
All right.
Show off.
I'm going to have a look at the, I got the poll in game up right now, and you can. It says, please make sure to vote for at least 6 of the pets that we would be interested in us making. So I haven't voted yet. I'm going to vote for the season pet, the farm pet, and they say at least 6, hey?
At least 6.
I'm going to say clue scroll, event and weekends pet. That's 1, 2, 3, 4. Then I don't really like the areas or the challenge one. I'm going to say the ports. So I think we could kick off a new theme there. And then the last one. Ah, what the hell? Pet of pets.
Bravo.
Yeah.
All right. And the results we got right now. Coming in on top, we got the clue scroll pet.
What?
At 13%. Followed by the area pet at 11%.
No. Oh.
Then the distraction and diversion pet at 9%, tied with the money-making pet as well at 9%. Then at 8%, we have the pet of pets. At 7%, we have the challenge pet and the minigame pet and the player-owned farm pet. Now at 6%, which getting down to the very bottom of the echelon here, we have the player-owned ports pet on its own. Then going down further from there, event and weekends pet. Further down on the list, the season pet. Then the wilderness and PvP pet. And then finally, none of the above.
I need to announce this to a number of clans I contact with to make sure that we set this poll to the right direction.
Well, I mean, it's been out for a long time already. It closes in 5 days. And, you know, we're likely set in the way this is going to be just based on the sheer amount of votes that come in when it goes live. I'm a little bit disappointed at the season pet, to be honest.
I'm wondering, didn't they add the option to hide result some time ago? Makes me wonder why they didn't choose to do so again, to try to hide the, or not count with the mentality of people voting.
I don't know. I think this is fairly innocuous enough that you don't need to hide the results, but it is what it is.
Fashionscape and show off the most complex skill in the game. People take that more seriously than maxing.
All right. Anything else on the pets, you guys?
No.
I mean, no. It's just. I'm sorry. This is just not an appealing update to me.
Some pets are and some aren't, and this just feels like more pets, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some pets just gets to your brains. So,
alrighty. Next up, for any Android users out there, RuneScape Mobile is now available on early access for all Android users, and we'll talk more about iOS in the live stream. But boy, one thing I really want to just highlight with this is that you get it on Google Play, but they produced a really, really slick preview for this, didn't they?
They really did. Yeah.
I mean, amazing. This is the RuneScape advertising and PR apparatus truly going out swinging. And, you know, I'd say it's probably time to apply this apparatus to the community side as well, because this looks like something you'd see from a AAA game company, the way this ad was set up.
I mean, honestly, I thought it actually made RuneScape look cooler than
it is. That's what you want, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, if you haven't had a look yet, just have a look on the news post and you'll be able to see it. And for those watching on the video version, it's right there as well. So, amazing.
I had a few people who were sad that it's for members only, but let's be honest, getting membership isn't too hard if you are ready with either your credit card or you have a somewhat decent money-making method to earn a bond.
Well, see, the reason you want it to be members only at first is because you don't want to effectively be launching a beta and using that to bring new players in.
I think that the data can easily get polluted by other players just creating a new account to toll. So, yeah, that's not something they want early in the beta when they are still looking for feedback.
Alrighty, let's move on to the live stream then. This was Mod Shawnee's last live stream as he is moving on. So we're going to start off with this talking about the changes that Mod Warden wants to bring in, and they had him on the live stream again, which was great. He said that in the past week they've received 300-plus emails to the new email address they set up. 80 to 90% of them have been constructive. They're looking at the emails right now to determine which one should be acted upon first, and they've started replying to them. And he said he was touched by how welcoming everyone who has sent emails has been so far. And, of course, that is the RS community that we all know.
I'm just here saluting right now for those 80 and 90% of those 300 emails being constructive. Is this the RS community, really?
I think it's the silent majority.
It's one of them.
It's the silent majority, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the silent majority.
It depends on where you go to find them.
This surprised me so much, and this is once again proof that there is hope in the RS community, and there's those who are really, really loud, and that sadly put a bad reputation for a game when they aren't as much as it appears to be.
All right, now here's the big news that came from Mod Warden being on the couch. They did say that there was an idea to release a dev blog and designer diary type video this week about microtransactions and monetization, but he said he wants to do it more in real time. So next Tuesday, November 5th, he's going to be on a live stream about microtransactions and monetization. And in general, he feels that microtransactions, player support, community, and duty of care and all that should not be a taboo subject for the company to talk about.
And that's
Grande
really weird.
Huevos.
What was that?
Grande Huevos.
I don't understand.
You know, speak Spanish?
No.
Español.
Español?
No,
it means big balls, Shane.
Oh, okay.
You put big balls on the table.
This Mod Warden, he's showing the way. And I'm impressed.
Yeah.
I barely know him, and he's already showing the way, and I see in front of me a way to bring in consistency and a straight direction for Jagex to walk in.
Right. And there's one sentence he said that really stood out to me, and I have to quote it here in our notes for this. He said, if we miss anything or misfire, we'll be sure to self-correct. And this says one thing on top, but it has oodles of meaning as you dig deeper down into it. What this effectively means is that if anything is, of course, missed or misfired, which means on the top of it, you read this, it says, hey, we make a mistake, we'll correct it, right? But by saying misfire and self-correct, those are very key word choices in this in particular, because if you say you misfire, what that means is that you tried to do something in a specific way, but it probably wasn't received in the way that you had hoped. And by using the term self-correct, that means that you're planting the seed that you're going to be getting ahead of potential situations and fixing them before they develop and turn into something else. So this was one sentence that he said, but this has so much more meaning than what it actually means on top.
Well, and he seems very proactive. He seems to be like, yes, this is the Mod Warden era. I am in charge. The success or failure will have a lot to do with what I'm doing. And he's very confident, I believe, in his ability. I don't know how everyone is just not jumping up and down, realizing
because this is what people want. This is what everybody says they wanted.
It's everything you could have wanted and then some. I mean, this was a really, really good really good acquisition for the players, and it boggles my mind that there's been that he's not being even more well received than what he is, because you know what he said in that tweet earlier that you'd sent me. It's everything.
Which I think we should read out now that you've mentioned.
We should because
I'll read it out.
It's so on point.
Yeah. And, you know, this is something that many people aren't aware of because this was sent in a reply to some people who were talking to him on Twitter. He hasn't actually outright tweeted. And if you just go to his Twitter page, it's blank. But the replies are all there. He said in reply to a question about microtransactions, he said things are way out of balance in providing good membership value versus MTX. With content not being there at times, slow, not the right content, it looks like all we care about is MTX promos, which is not the case, but it is very unbalanced regardless. And, you know, this is going to be successful, and here's why. Have we ever had a executive producer for the game of RuneScape that has matched the player sentiment?
No, never.
Like, he's doing it in tweets.
I'm not sure we've ever had an executive producer, have we?
No, I don't think so. But he's doing it in tweets, and he's saying it in different ways in the live stream, in particular with the misfire and self-correct sense, is that, as I said, that means they're looking to solve potential problems before they become bigger problems on that, which is one thing, but at the same time, on the surface, it's just like, hey, if we make a mistake, we'll fix it. But that statement means they're going to be going forward and trying to prevent bigger things from happening on that front. So he's doing this a lot in the tweets that he puts out in replies to people. And the first step in order to fix any problem, whether it be something like this in regards to microtransactions or it be any kind of PR problem that you're having, is that your community won't listen to you unless you match their sentiments first. So he's taking a very important step for this.
Yeah, no, I think he's taken a very, it just seems positive to me. And I know people are skeptical, but it's like, I don't understand why you would be skeptical this time, because this is different. It's noticeably different than anything we've had in the past, so I feel like that's every reason to believe he is going to try to fix it. And I mean, we talked about his background last week, you know, and I'm still seeing people post like, why doesn't he say where he came from? Well, I'd hate for you to have to do any, yes, I know, that's what I mean, like, I'd hate for you to do any work, but you couldn't have, I just don't see how you could have found anyone better suited for the job. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. He also did say they're going to be trying out new MTX models in the future, or ideas in the future, seeing what works, looking at other ways of diversifying the business side of it, which means potentially moving away from microtransactions, which we said that's what he was brought in to do. And lo and behold, here we are, confirmed this week. And he did say that the cat promo was one of those things. And once again, that's something we called correctly. And I would even say the oddments is one of those too, based on this.
Yep, he alluded to that.
So, I mean, for anybody who's skeptical, you know, just read Tannis's Informer article about giving Mod Warden a chance.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I'm telling you, like, you don't just spend money willy-nilly on someone like this. He was brought in to fix that problem. Like, that's his background.
And that speaks to a very good CEO who is going to make hires to fix specific problems and bring different people in based on the different phase the business is at.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a positive sign. I don't know what more we want. Like, I know we want to see the action, but the same week we found out who he was, he put actions in place.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I was like, what are you talking about? Like, as soon as we found out who he was, he
Look,
put things in place.
Everybody listening to this podcast, if there's one thing to take away from this episode, it's that decisions and movement in business, especially when you have a good deal of company inertia, takes time. Same thing in government. It takes time to turn a ship around, whether it is a government or a business, and put it on a new course. So,
still, I'm a person who sometimes finds words to be cheap, and therefore, over time, during the many years I've lived and gone through high school and university, especially university, words could be cheap. Therefore, I'm putting my confidence behind actions. And I can tell you right now, from what I have seen, Warden have action behind his words. And that gets my confidence.
Yep.
And see, that's key, because, you know, he didn't just come out and say, he came, when we found out about it, when we
the
found out he was
actions had already been taken.
He had, yes! Like, so, you know,
He says, you want to build a house? Already built it. Look, surprise.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, and the most important thing that he did that we haven't even, we didn't mention it this time around, but I mean, it says something about a person that will come in and kind of survey and look around and figure something out.
That's a good leader.
Yes.
And that's what he did. Like,
I mean, that's the same thing I did this summer when I took over Clan Quest head of Guild Council.
See, Shane knows how to do it.
So, all right. Next up, they did talk a lot about the Stone Spirits on the live stream as well, which, I mean, we have already given our thoughts on this, but we'll go through what Jack and Shogun had to say on this. So they said, yeah, this is being farmed by alts, the completely AFK mining.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to see this backed up with some numbers, just saying, so we can see that. They also did receive feedback about the stamina bar being hidden or presenting some kind of message when AFK mining, and they said they could look into maybe making that a default. And, you know, now that it's so painful, I mean, I still personally have my reservations about that, but now might be the time to have a look at it. Full AFK mining, about one quarter of what it is now. We talked about that. New use for the perfect juju mining potions, which we talked about, should have been mentioned in the news post.
Yeah.
It's ultimately a complex design question, and Mod Jack actually took about 30 seconds to figure out how he wanted to word this here, because we've always said here on the show that if you have a question about something RuneScape related and you ask Mod Jack, you're going to get the answer even if you don't like it.
Yes.
And this was one of those things. That. He said, the design question is, should changes to the value of items be accompanied by changes to the things that drops them in order to make them more valuable? And he said, this is a design question that's more of a Mod Timbo question. And he's moving on. Jack is moving on to the episodic content team. Or, sorry, the quest team that's going to be writing all those quests.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He is. So Mod Timbo is going to be handling these kind of questions in the future, and I think we are very lucky to have that being happening. Nothing against Mod Jack.
Yeah.
It's just Mod Timbo is excellent when it comes to game
knowledge. We'll get it straight
from
his mouth, you know? I mean,
yeah.
You can't really get any better than that.
Good guy. I can vote for him. I met him at RuneFest 2017, and I pulled out Hazelmere's signet ring in real life from his ear. True story.
There's also discussion of increasing component rates even further than mentioned in the post. Because they're good on a per bar basis, but not a per time basis. Smithable salvage. Yeah, we talked about this back in February or March. He says he can't see a huge problem with converting stone spirits into salvages, not making any promise on that. And swapping stone spirits for gold is something that could be looked into, but will be a last resort decision if they make it.
I hope they keep the stone spirits, because I like the idea of it. I just want the use of it to be more diverse or to be more attractive, so skillers, COEs, and to really buy them and almost have it mandatory for mining. And with a cheap price, it's not like asking for 2 mil to include it.
Yeah.
I mean, I get where you're coming from, Tycho. Part of where I come from on that is, you know, at some point you kind of need to just rip off the Band-Aid, right? And so I look at Stone Spirits with like this half measure where we wanted to take off the ores off the drop tables, but not really. Like we do, but we don't. And at some point we need to just do that. We need to get the herbs off of the drop tables. We need to get the,
you know, that would be the simplest solution to all of this.
We need to get all of that stuff, you know, off of them.
And then,
because I feel like it was a half measure to begin with.
Yeah. And with that, if they did that, then you're looking at a pure skilling side of it, and you can see what needs to be tweaked directly with mining. So,
yeah.
But, you know, they said that that's something, I think it was asked at Runefest, and they said, yeah, that's something we could look at down the road. So, I mean, it's not off their radar. It's been heard.
Right.
Anything else on Stone Spirits before we move on to the next big reveal?
Just one tiny bit. I hope they are not over-relying on perfect juju mining potion being the absolute must to have if you are not at the screen.
I wouldn't say it's an over-reliance because they're still pretty hard to get.
At least they are tradable. So, but yeah, they are 35k each at the moment, but that will go up if it's the only solution to AFK mining.
Tannis, anything else on Stone Spirits?
No, I'll be glad when we can put this chapter behind us, to tell you the truth.
Oh, me too. So they also talked about the early access launch for Android, and in particular, the big reveal with this was Maud Hypnos, who is the product director for RuneScape and the leader of the core experience team.
Who would have thought we had one of those?
He's been around for 18 months. He hasn't been introduced before.
And I really like the idea of introducing J-Mods who are doing the back-end work to the couch.
Well, no. I mean, you want to have the heads of each of the teams introduced. We know Mod Hypnos. We know Mod Osborne. The only one we haven't met is the head of the Live Ops team, which is in charge of Treasure Hunter stuff, which will presumably be meeting next week. So
whoever that Matt guy was that he kept saying.
Yeah,
which
that's
I think
right.
They said Mod Mike? Is that what they said? Mod Mike?
Maybe I might have missed that. I don't know.
Yeah, he kept saying, I was like, who's Matt? Who's Matt? I kept listening. I'm like, oh, Mod Mike. Because Shawnee's like, you mean Mod Mike?
In regards to iOS, the reason it's later next year is that the experience, and this is his take on it, the experience for iOS needs to be the best that it can be so it matches what the users expect on this platform, which is what I've said before, is you get nailed on the iOS App Store if you try and release an app that crashes even once. If you don't have the top Apple-esque experience on an iOS app, you are dead. So they need it to be absolutely perfect before they release it, which was my take on this too.
Yeah. Well, and we knew it was going to take forever.
And yeah.
Sucks,
and in regards to, you know, getting out the current iOS build to some people, it comes down to test flight once again, which I've talked about before on the show. Test flight lets an app developer only put out 10,000 test beta codes, and you need to set each one of them up directly and send them out to your users. So it's not an easy thing to do when you don't know which of your users are iOS based. So,
well, I'm iOS based, and I would like one of those beta keys, and I can help you with if telling you how accessible it is. So please send me a key.
Yeah,
do I have to get test flight?
I am iOS too. Yeah, it's really easy. To install an iOS beta, all you do is you install the Test Flight app from the App Store, and then inside Test Flight, you can press the redeem button, and then you'll be given a Test Flight invitation code. You just punch that in, and then it will download the app.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds pretty painless.
It's really simple to do. It's just it's limited, and you have to do it manually.
Okay.
So, And next up brings the part of Mod Shawnee's leaving party, and it was also asked who's going to be hosting live streams in the future. It will be going to either Mod Porky or Mod JD, and these are the people that we have, of course, suggested host these live streams in Shawnee's absence. So we're going to be pretty happy with this.
Exactly, right?
They were exactly the two people we wanted, right?
Yeah.
And we even had Mod Porky here in episode 712, Special Effects and Double XP Weekend. Give that a listen.
Okay, right, so his leaving party, they actually put a piece of content in-game to celebrate him. If you give a piece of cake to Shawnee the Gobi in Mask Cam, it will reward you with a Gobi mask.
Oh, yeah, it will allows you to transform into a Gobi, and this one you can walk around and run and do, just be a Gobi wherever you like. And it's also a free-to-play item one of our clan has discovered, so could go around trolling people
and,
on free worlds.
And you know, with the emphasis on Mod Shawnee, how it's always his birthday, they did sing happy birthday to him, so we'll play a little bit of that right now on the show here.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Shawnee. Happy birthday to you.
And many more.
And, you know, he was very emotional at the end of this. It was obviously, you know, a big shift, I think, for him, and definitely a huge shift for the community, because I think when we look at RuneScape as a community and how open the company is with their players, it's practically unprecedented to see something to that degree, and he's a large part of that, I feel. Ever since he started hosting the live streams back in 2015 or something to that effect. Granted, they were open before, but not nearly as open as they are now. And he deserves a great deal of credit for that. So they are losing someone of massive weight in terms of...
I think the most... I mean, you know, there's many outstanding qualities that Mod Shawnee has, but the one quality that he has that I think was so essential, especially during the time that he served, was I felt like he made the community trust him. Like, you could trust Mod Shawnee was, like, on your side, or would at least ask the questions or try to get you an answer. Like, you never felt like he was paying you lip service. You always felt like, no, he's trying. If he can't do it, then they won't do it. Like, you always felt like he had your back. Like, he had the player's back. And that's hard to duplicate, but...
What really impressed me was his view of a player. Even on his farewell party, he got 120 smithing, 50 million fishing and range XP, and 1.5 billion total XP. But when you were talking to him, you were talking to another player, somebody who'd gone through everything the game has to offer. He has the comp cape. He's gotten the warden title, which is all Telos drops. Whenever you communicated with him, you were communicating with somebody who was not just understanding you, but somebody who really have been through the journey that you have done yourself. And he always went that extra mile to ensure that the player base could be as comfortable as possible. He puts a ton of time into clans, and 70% of all of his players are into clans. And it was really emotional. Some of his talk really got me, and I will really I will really miss him, and I'm so glad that 900 people came to his farewell party.
Yeah, they filled up Worlds 66 with that. And also on the live stream, there was cake, there was animation, motion, goodbye video from the art team, a framed Gobi thank you piece of art from the wiki, and to top it all off at the end, a goodbye video from the J-Mods, one not so serious and then one wee bit more serious associated with that. And then following that, he signed off the live stream for the last time as Monshani. But of course, he did stream later in the day on his own personal stream. And, you know, so many episodes of the RuneScape Q&A live streams were showcased like this, including the water bottle moment as well. So anybody who's watched live streams, of course, will all see this from the past. I know I really don't have much else to say on this. Just, I guess, to say thank you for being a good community manager. And, you know, good community managers make our lives a lot easier here at the podcast.
Yes, they do.
He really did. I'm so happy for the party. It was the best party I had in 5 years. So much that the minimap showed that I was the only one at the party with cannons and flowers going on. That's also one thing they need to update now with NXT going up. But I'm just so happy, and still it got me that he's leaving, but he got his priority right. Family comes first, and his new job is going to allow him to work from home, so he's going to be with his wife and his daughter, and that really is gonna mean a lot to him.
Yeah, he's moving over to Unity, which Unity is a game engine type thing that allows rapid prototyping of video games. So it's definitely a move up, but you don't ever replace that RuneScape feeling. Tanis, do you have anything else on Monshani? Because I know Taika wanted to mention a bit about the party.
Yeah, no, I just want to say, you know, we're sad to see him go, but at the same time, I'm very happy for him and this opportunity that he has, you know, like I just wish him all the best. So.
Indeed. Taika, you have anything else left from the party that you want to bring up?
Just a tiny bit that even though Shawnee has left, I'm still happy that he could go off and still talk about the amazing individuals that were there for him, and that really proves that the tears proved it all, how heartbreaking it really was to leave them and all the fun times, and I even found out that Mod Timbo and Shogun were Shawnee's witnesses at his wedding, and it could only be done thanks to them, because of UK laws.
Interesting.
And it was done during regular work hours, so he had to go to Osborne and borrow them. So in a sense, one can say that Shawnee got married on a Jagex lunch break. Thanks to Jagex. But no, really, the connections he had with both players and Jagex employees were really deep. He is somebody who's going to be missed, and he's somebody who's really earned his spot. And the last thing I want to say is that sadly, the cold truth is that you don't realize the true value of somebody until they leave.
And in general, I think that's a good lesson for life, too, for everybody.
It is.
Yeah.
All righty. So once again, thank you, Monshani, for being our community manager for the last number of years. And it certainly, as we said, makes it a lot easier to do a podcast when you have community managers who are so open and willing to handle issues that come up.
All right. Now go with Doc Off.
All righty. Well, we do have a listener question this week, but before we do that, I'll just take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters for the week, because yeah, we do have a lot of those this week. So starting off, I'd like to thank Arvids L, Brock H, Cass, Christian S, Darren L, Diana, Jason S, Kyle, Logan H, Rippeth, Sam W, a new arrival this week, Tim A, welcome aboard, Tom V, and Zez. Thank you all of you for choosing to support RSBNB Update on Patreon. It truly does mean the world to us, letting us do what we do in addition to the podcast, of course. And if you're wanting to read anything about this, just head over to patreon.com/RSBNB. And for as little as a dollar a month, you can gain access to our entire back catalog of monthly bits, or you get early access to the show notes, get a special mention in the show notes, and you have the ability to join in our roundtable discussions each and every month, and you can vote on the topic for the monthly bit. This month we're doing interview with an independent game developer, and that is, of course, Sirion. He'll provide some insight into the way that games are made and the way the game industry works. Since we are a podcast about a game, RuneScape, it makes sense to talk about that. Also, for $3 a month, you can get a special VIP rank on Discord and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and gain access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And finally, for $5 a month, you get a special shout-out each and every week with exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show at the end of the year. So I just want to also say with this that I already mentioned the monthly bit and the roundtable, but this month for November, we are going to be doing things differently. Instead of an Inside RSBNB Update special, we are going to have a Patreon-exclusive live stream where I have a look for the first time ever at 120 Farming and Herblore when that comes out. So that should be a fun thing to experience all as a group. So details will be posted on that once we know the release date. And should we get to that $99 a month tier, it'll be movie night in the RSBNB Discord, which will definitely include some Star Trek along the way. Once again, all of that and more available at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. It really means the world to us.
All right. So this question comes from Jaden. It's a text question sent in via Twitter. Do you think that the herbicide upgrade from the player-owned farm farmer's market should expand to auto-pickup of noted or grimy herbs without cleaning? Jaden feels like auto-pickup and cleaning of unnoted herbs isn't that all valuable for how much the upgrade costs of 25,000 beans, and I want to spark some interest in this. Moderoli said it could be considered in a future update a year ago, and upon poking him again, Rolly has said that now Orion, Raven, or Tomb could potentially look into this. So what do you guys think?
That sounds like a good idea. I mean, you don't get the unnoted herbs that often, so I'd be fine with it.
Yeah, they've kind of shifted away from that, right?
Yeah, they have.
Yeah, and which is sad because with Aniconia, they released a herb bag, which is perfect if there are any J-Mods listening, to unnote the herbs from bossing instead of removing them. Then people are forced to either go and bank them or to bring their glorious herb bag and store them and make money that way. Or we could have a second upgrade to the herbicide that costs, let's see, this one costs 25,000, so maybe this one 50,000, which would be very, very useful for bossing.
All right.
But I still think that with the herb bag, they should move in unnoted herbs direction.
I mean, I don't disagree, but I think it's just that would just piss people off.
I don't know. I mean, the herbicide on its own, from my perspective, is already pretty powerful, because it automatically picks up any herbs that are not burned, aside from the noted ones.
That's true. Yeah. But it's just that there's a limited juice. The only monster I can think of that drops unnoted herbs or really chaos druids that are like level 15 combat, and then aberrant specters that are 60 that are mid level.
But if you're talking about picking up noted grimy herbs already, don't we already have things for that, like our legendary pets?
Yeah, it picks up the noted herbs for me. Yeah, that's what I do. But anything that I can free up, you know, free it up to pick up other stuff, I'm happy with.
From the design perspective, I just think that it's not needed because we have ways of doing that before, and we also have area loot. So I just don't see a reason for this to be an upgrade that I would want to purchase. You know, if anything, I would expand it to do something else related to the farming skill post 120 rather than just picking up an item. Because, you know, this is not an insult to anything or any item or anyone, but I feel like it's a trivial thing to have an item that is bought with the farming currency beans to pick up an item.
Well, it could clean it for you. That would be something.
Or I just got an amazing idea. What if, while destroying the herb, it has a chance to upgrade it?
No.
But that would bring in the risk and reward type. Like, nobody wants Gurums, for example. It's the lowest. But if they it could
well, no one wants Marintils either.
Okay. Let's take Irrit. That's maybe, made for super maybe, tech.
But I have a different idea on this. If you want to go down this path of letting it clean herbs, herbicide clean herbs, make it a 50k bean upgrade, but make it so that you need to charge it with something from the new 120 farming stuff.
I don't.
It seems a little too much for me.
People charge their spring cleaners with no problem.
Though, man. I mean, that's pretty substantial.
Okay, make it 25k then, if they were to do another upgrade. But I think, you know, I think we're kind of wandering on this that, you know, it was for the upgrade price, 25k. It's just, what can we add on to this upgrade? So let's forget the idea of adding anything else on to a next upgrade of 50k, whichever you guys suggested that. I don't know. That probably shouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's Tycho.
No, that was me.
I mean, you could just make it more versatile by having it charge with something, because I think people charge their spring cleaners with no worry.
I mean, kind of.
So.
Got to buy springs, I suppose. How about components? Organic components.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh, there you go.
Tannis. Oh, I love you.
So if you upgrade the new herbicide with the current upgrade that's in game, just add a toggle to it that it either picks up the herbs, as it does now, or gives you an option to get organic components instead of burning them for XP.
Yeah.
Done. I think that's a better idea.
I do too.
So. Agreed. Let's send it to Warden, because we know he's listening. He's the man at the job.
No, this is the one you want to send to Raven, Tomb, or Orion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alrighty, thank you, Jaden, for that question. That was a good one. You know, initially, I didn't like your idea that you had here, but I think we've kind of morphed it into something that makes a lot more sense. So, there we go.
At least from our point of view, and ultimately, it's down to Granny to decide if we can get some absolute units out of this.
Alrighty. If you guys want to send your own questions in, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com. Or you can leave them on Twitter for us at RSBNB, DM us, or at mention us there, and we'll get your questions. All right, so in tech news this week, big news from EA. EA is making nice with Steam this week. So much so that the new Star Wars game to come out in, I think it's a few days, right, Tannis?
No, it's the 16th.
Oh, the 16th. Okay, a couple of weeks.
Yeah, a couple
of weeks. The new Star Wars game, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, is going to be available on Steam and is available now on pre-order on Steam.
Already added to my wish list.
Ooh.
So this is...
It actually it's going to be a good one. This is a lightsaber-based one, so good stuff.
Oh, boy. All right.
Shane, we all have a soft spot in our hearts for glowing lightsabers.
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't?
So, in addition to this new game being made available, all new games from EA will be available on Steam. And starting next summer, the EA Access catalog is also going to be made available on Steam as well. Which,
yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, for anyone who's not aware, EA Access is a service you can subscribe to, and you get instant access to all of the big EA games like the NHL and FIFA series, amongst others. I think a Battlefield or two was probably in there as well. Apex Legends, The Sims, Need for Speed, Titanfall, those are all EA games that were a part of EA Access at one point or another. So I think this is a big deal, and people are probably not, you know, fully up to speed yet on this news, because what they aim to do is ultimately link Origin accounts to Steam accounts. For the time being, you won't be able to play your Origin games on Steam, but that might change eventually, they said, as, quote, the relationship between Steam and Valve is evolving with EA. So what's more is you'll be able to, of course, add the games from your other launchers into Steam as shortcuts through the non-Steam games feature. But, you know, I think the biggest thing about this is the fact that they want to eventually bring the Origin friends list over to Steam and your Origin purchases over to Steam too.
Yeah, that is the big deal. And I guess the only part I'm going is, okay, we'll make sure you leave all of your bad shit over there, EA. Leave your baggage at the door. But no, I think it's cool, because actually I have some Origin games, because I mean there are certain things that you don't have a choice, you have to buy it there. So but everything else, you know, you have Steam, so it would be nice to have that all tied together.
Yeah, your Origin and Steam friends list will be integrated, and you'll be able to launch directly from Steam, which is, I think, everyone wanted from Origin to begin with, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Because the software has never been up to par.
No.
And it's worth noting that this won't be happening when Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order arrives, but when other games like Apex Legend and FIFA 20 do make their way to Steam, they do hope to have the Origin and Steam friends lists integrated. So, I think this is a big deal for anybody who plays EA games. I don't play any at this point in time, but I've always been a fan of the Battlefield series, and it's just so annoying to have to open up Origin for that. So,
yeah. Well, you played Battlefield 1, didn't you, Shane?
No, I didn't. Last one I really played was Battlefield 3.
See, Battlefield 1 is World War 1. I love it.
Okay.
It's really good.
All right.
It's got good, great stories.
All right. Fair enough.
I must make a confession that I grew up with an EA game called Quidditch, Harry Potter Quidditch.
Okay.
I just want to say that the currently confirmed list of games, the EA games coming to Steam, are Fallen Order, Apex Legends, FIFA 20, Battlefield 5, The Sims 4, and Unravel 2. In addition to the new Star Wars title.
Okay.
So, very nice.
Decent, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, next in tech news, Apple has completed its transformation to a services company. They had their product earnings call today for the last quarter, and, you know, the iPhone 11 series is doing okay, but it's not doing as good as they would hope. But what is blowing everyone away so far is the increasing growth on services and wearables and the iPad. So with this, the bulk of their services, or sorry, their wearables revenue came from the $400 Apple Watch and the $159 new AirPods. And this is the same week that they announced AirPods Pro. So Apple is morphing into a services and wearable company because with – in addition to, of course, the Watch and the AirPods and now the AirPods Pro, services like iCloud and the new Apple Arcade are performing very well for what they'd like them to do. And, you know, the iPhone is about half of Apple's revenue normally. It fell by 10% to about $33 billion. This past quarter. And yes, $33 billion is still a huge hunk of change, but but revenue, or sorry, market share as part of the company falling nearly 10% is a huge deal for Apple. So this, I think, signals that their transformation to a wearables and services company is now pretty much complete. And we talked about this before on the podcast too, how Apple is aiming to effectively rebrand itself as a wearable and services company with the Watch, the AirPods now, then Apple TV Plus, Apple Arcade, and Apple News Plus as well. So,
It surprises me, and at the same time not, because whenever I think of Apple, it's the iPhone. It's the symbol, the icon.
Yeah, and it was the iPod before that.
Yeah, but at the same time, whenever I'm outdoors, I see the other. I don't see the iPhone from Apple. I see the other products like the AirPod. AirPods are everywhere here in the Nordic lands.
Really?
Like people, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So apparently, we must be some kind of very. We must have very rich hipsters around here, but so many people are wearing them. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So
and you know, this speaks to a lot of volume on this too, because Tanis, you and I are both using iPhone 8s and we don't feel any reason to upgrade.
Yeah, exactly.
And with people keeping their iPhones for 3 years like we are, at least, you need to find a different revenue stream. Whereas it used to be two, now we're pretty much three, because these are pocket computers that are just so darn powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense from that very perspective and that click to me. So I think I was skeptical on the services side, but I think with services and wearables, they can probably make a go at it. It's just a question of if it's sustainable. Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as it's sustainable enough to you can be out mountain climbing with them, well, it's sold. We are sold. They have conquered the Nordic lands.
All right. So moving away from Apple. Do any of you guys know what happened 50 years ago this week?
I wasn't even born then. Is this some kind of story my great-grandfather would tell me?
Well, maybe. It's about the birthday of ARPANET, which was the precursor to the internet.
Oh.
So 50 years ago this week, the first message between computers was sent over ARPANET, and this was back in 1969 at UCLA, where a signal was transmitted between two computers to the Stanford Research Institute, and the initial message was the letters L-O, which were sent before the machine crashed. And what we could effectively say about this is that ARPANET was a U.S. Department of Defense project aimed to build a network of computers across the U.S. in the event of a nuclear war. The message was supposed to be login, but the system crashed and only sent the first two letters. And, you know, this is important because, you know, we don't think about what ARPANET was, but it was effectively the first way to send packets over the internet in implementing something called the TCP/IP protocol, which is still used today to just send packets of data between websites and servers, just as one example. So as time went on, the idea behind this developed from the 1960s and through the 70s and 80s to the point in the 1990s where this was applied to build the internet and the World Wide Web as we know it. And, you know, I think not many people in this day and age who, I guess we could say, see, this is something that's very prevalent in computer science education. So I'm just wondering to you guys out there who don't have a computer science background, have you guys heard of ARPANET before?
I have, yeah.
Okay, all right.
I have a bachelor's degree in computer engineering, and I haven't heard of it.
Okay, all right. So maybe it's just me in terms of the way I look up all these historical things. That Tanis is interested in history too, so that could be.
My professor at the university were all fossil with white hair. But they told me many old things and dead languages, but I have no memory of this being mentioned.
All right. And, you know, going back in the day, the Wikipedia article said that most computer science companies regarded the ARPA proposal as outlandish, and only 12 submitted bids to build a network. And of the 12, ARPA regarded only 4 as top-rank contractors. So
that's why you need governments to build things sometimes. Yeah,
to give the technological innovation a kick in the pants, just look at what the moon missions did for that. And, you know, it just shows that what is initially an idea going forward might seem difficult at the time, but with research and development put forward into it, it can truly change the world.
So. You just reminded me of John F. Kennedy's words, "We don't do this because it's easy, but because it's hard."
Well, that's one side of it too. But just in general, I don't think anything easy to be built is people who build things that are easy don't really wind up getting the same benefits out of building something that's truly hard, as we see was the case with ARPANET here. So,
And 50 years ago.
Indeed.
Really?
All righty. So we're going to wrap this show up. We do have our current thieving skill of the month going on. We talked about the Dungeoneering one last week with Raptoid, and Raptoid once again is winning the thieving contest status.
So, there he goes, he's on fire.
He is. He's a machine. So we'll have, of course, the Farming and Herblore skill of the month for November once those are released. So that should be good fun to see what happens with everybody on that. But we also do have some achievements this week, which I will run through. So first up this week, on the 28th of October, we have Iskatu with 120 Dungeoneering, Sipedaboo with 99 Magic on the 27th, Scarecrow got 120 Dungeoneering also on the 27th, XGWenYVARX with 99 Thieving on the 25th, and finally Wiki86 with 99 Firemaking on October 24th. Congratulations, everyone.
Congrats.
All right. Pick of the week time. Taika, what do you got for us?
So, I got something that my brother have been more excited than me, and he's really been a fan of, and he dragged me into it. And that is the Marvel Universe and Avengers Endgame. We had a previous pick of the week with Tanis with Avengers Infinity War, which was an amazing movie in itself, and that really set the tone that this is it, we failed, and Endgame continues on that. It really gave the audience a deep sense of we lost, there's no way to go back, there's nothing we can do. We really bring in emotion and sense of loss to the audience. And that is something that really brings back my faith in Hollywood. Not that they can really make good movies again. And right when I thought that, okay, they're just going to bring everything back. Now, spoilers ahead, just as I mentioned. Everything back. Then this enormous, big final fight happens. And if you have watched Infinity War, you're probably thinking, nothing can match that. Infinity War was perfect. No way. Well, yes way. Because that was simply amazing. I strongly believe nothing Hollywood would ever do could outmatch their fight from Infinity War. I was proven wrong. And I'm so happy for it. Like, I've seen the movie now 3 times. One time at the cinema and 2 times at home on Blu-ray. Like, it's amazing. And what even stands out more to me when I'm thinking about it is that you don't need to see all the Marvel movies in the right order. It starts with Iron Man. That, when was Iron Man even made? It was like 2012? Or something like that. Like,
might even been earlier.
I think 7.
Well, many, many years ago. But I don't need to go that far back to understand it. It's not like a Harry Potter series where you need to read the book before seeing the movie in order to understand the whole plot. You can start wherever you want and just go along with it. Just hop on the train and enjoy the ride. And that's what I'm really amazed with Marvel, and especially with their new movie, Spider-Man, Long Way From Home, which takes part after Endgame, but still is a good standalone movie where you don't need much context. So, if you haven't watched Endgame, I strongly recommend that you watch Infinity War and then Endgame, just to really set the mood, and it's a must. It's a must.
All right.
It's a must in your DVD box.
Good pick of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Have any of you two seen it, by the way?
No.
I haven't seen Endgame. I wanted to go to the theaters to see it, and we just never got around to it, because, believe it or not, Infinity War was our first Marvel movie that my wife and I saw. Mm-hmm. So, and we loved it. So, yeah, we're wanting to... We wanted to see Endgame, but I guess I'll have to wait and see if it's going to be on Disney when they launch their streaming this month.
On Disney. Next thing you know, there's a Mickey Mouse running around with all 5 Infinity Stones with Goofy.
Well, you know, I mean, it's on my list. I got to watch Endgame now, along with the Obi-Wan and the Mandalorian. So, you know.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to fire things up now.
Ooh.
Get it, Shane.
So, as you guys know, I've been getting ready for 120 Farming and 120 Herblore. I have gone back to Big Game Hunter. I'm currently trying to get some of the big top-end dinosaur eggs in time for launch on that. We'll see if that arrives. You know, for all we know, 120 Farming and Herblore could be next week, but I imagine they'll want to talk about it in a live stream first, so I don't think it'll be next week, since next week is the first week of November. But nonetheless, I'm ready if it comes next week. If not, that's fine. So, as you guys know, part of that involves, in addition to hunting on Anachronia for the Jadinkos, which went well, herb farming. And, you know, herbs are great these days. Lots of value in those herbs. Lots of value in ultra compost, too. And I have long said that in doing herb farming, I have only seen people at the Wilderness Farming Patch maybe, you know, 4 or 5 times. I could definitely count it on one hand. And I've never been PK'd until yesterday. And, you know, this just goes out there. Anybody listening who PKs, I don't know if anybody out there does PK at the Wilderness Farming Patch, do not get between me and my herb run. Do not. It is a mistake. It is a colossal mistake. So much so that when I was killed yesterday doing this farming run, I made sure that, you know, after I took this detour that all the herbs were planted. You did not derail me in what I was doing. The herbs got planted as expected. But before I moved out and went to finish the herb run, I took a bit of a detour. And the poor sap who killed me was incredibly dumb, I must say that. If anybody wants a name to go and hunt him down and kill him again, go for it. He's probably still got his private chat on, and that's why I say he's dumb. Because you were taught at the very beginning of RuneScape PK school back in 2004 that if you're in the wilderness PKing people, you do not PK with your private chat on. You do not. That's the dumbest thing you do. So I trailed this guy for a little while, and I found him in the wilderness killing someone else, and I killed him again on my own. And that was the best feeling ever, because, you know, I don't get mad about things. When something goes wrong my way, it just fires me up even more so to solve the problem, and I did. He died, I died, there was a bit of a cost associated with it, so what? Justice was dealt at the end of the day. So my message out there to everybody who does wilderness farm runs and wants to do something about this, if you've ever gotten PK'd before, my question to you out there is, would you be interested in a bounty service? The bounty service would work like this. We would have a form on our website. You, with that, input your RuneScape name, the person whose name killed you, and you also provide a screenshot of the death board in Edgeville, because there's a board in Edgeville, right outside the wilderness, that shows all of the PKs on that specific world. So you take a screenshot of that, you put the amount that you'd be willing to associate with that bounty going forward, and we'll find somebody to carry out that bounty. If this sounds interesting to anybody else out there, we're effectively with this wanting to bring back Bounty Hunter to the wilderness. If this is interesting to you, let me know. We'll get it set up for next week's show, and we'll start taking submissions on this. Because, you know, some people get mad about this. For me, I just got really incensed, and I felt a drive to PK and kill in the wilderness that I'd never felt before.
I got mad when it happened to me. Several times.
I had it happen to me once, and I strongly disliked gathering all the crystal dust for an attuned crystal seed.
Right, and it doesn't even need to be, yeah, that's what I lost, and big deal, because I mean that's AFKable, right? Or worst case, you go to the traveling merchant, boo-hoo. So, yeah. If it's, you know, divination, agility, or anything else, if you're at all interested in this, let me know, because I want to make a bit of a movement on this.
Yeah.
So there we go.
And we shall never again doubt Shane's capability for vengeance.
That's right. All right. What have you been up to this week, Tanis? I was fired up all day for this, and I've been waiting for this moment on the show, if you can't tell.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. I haven't done much this week, just some charm hunting. I really can't wait for the charming potions to come out. I want to see just how good that's going to be, and that's all I've been doing in RuneScape, and basically just counting the days till Red Dead 2 comes out on PC next week, Tuesday.
All right.
And for me, well, I haven't been playing much, and I haven't been on this podcast as much as I wanted to either. This is my second appearance this year, which is surprisingly low, and which I have a reason to why I couldn't do it before. Now, first to RuneScape, I haven't barely been playing RuneScape, but since the banking work, I set up a loot tab which has been growing a lot. So much that I recently noticed, wait a minute, I'm not selling anything. Where's my cash? I'm just losing money here. And that really made me realize how much impact it had on me. So I try to encourage clannies to go out bossing a bit and teach them a couple of lessons. And with that, I realized that I prefer bossing with noobs. And every time David or Popcorn encourage me to go out with them, I feel like a drag. And it's sad because they are such nice people, but I somehow enjoy being a teacher and being along with them. But the best experience I clearly had was the party we had with Mod Johnny. It was both emotional, it was so enormous that we had 900 players in Falador Square just bombing cannons, flower, the pets. I mean, you name it. It was the best party I had in like 5 years, maybe even 10 years of the century. And then we moved over to the Falador Podium, and people went wild. We had like entire 92 weapons just dropped into the chest, a constant balloon dropping. And if there are 900 people trying to pop one balloon, well, you can imagine the odds.
Oh, and the lag. So, and the lag. I stay away from the party room when that's happening. Good.
Oh, yeah. But at least somebody was crazy enough to donate an Easter egg to drop.
Oh, wow.
And those are really, really rare.
Yeah.
So,
fun fact.
A huge party.
Back in 2006, we ran a drop party for spring here at RSB&B. Mm-hmm. We dropped 3 Easter eggs that were valued at 250K each at the time.
Wow. Anyways, but that was I'm so happy we had that party for him. And we and Jagish really show that he matters and he will continue to matter in our hearts for a very long time.
And I'm so very glad that I killed the guy in the wilderness.
Yeah. I just want to quickly mention also my reason why I haven't been playing RS or been on the podcast for this year. I have a confession to make. And that is that...
You hate us all?
Well, I hate you kind of a bit, Shane, but not really Tanis. Tanis, he's just a lovely guy. I mean, wow, Tanis, you're really on fire, especially both before and after Runefest. I mean, oh gosh, I love it. Give this man a ticket already. Anyways, so the reason why I haven't been on as much is because this caveman you're listening to, this nomad, this Viking in the Nordic lands, have decided to become civilized. And what does it mean to become civilized? That means getting a job. So I have finished university. I managed to get a job. And now, this past week, I have been doing a tradition where I run around and I plunder and I scream like war cries all over the place. 1,200 years ago, that was called a raid in the UK. Today, it's called looking for an apartment. So, and I managed to get a really good contract. So, I'm actually moving. I have a well-paid job, and I'm moving on with a new chapter in my life. And that's why I've basically never... Basically, RuneScape has so little time in my life, and why I haven't really been pushing so much in being on the RSB&B update, even though I wanted many times, because I was just simply too busy. But Shane and Tanis, really Tanis, really, really, gold star to you, is really doing well here, and I will continue to support them from the background. I got a really nice surprise for both of you when winter comes that I hope you will like.
And if winter is coming.
Yeah, winter is on the way.
Winter is coming.
Thank you, Tycho, for that. And, you know, all the best to you in continuing on and moving forward in life.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, I believe we can end this episode of RSB&B Update. And, you know, I once again, we'll just end this by saying thank you to Mod Shani for being community manager for all these years. of RuneScape. And if you guys want to join our friends chat, visit us in-game at Bits Bytes. And you can also subscribe to us on any number of podcast listeners out there. iTunes, Google Play, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, YouTube, Spotify, even anything under the sun. Update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. And with that being said, we'll be back next week for RSBNB Update's first episode of November. Take care, everyone.
See ya.
Mwah, mwah.